All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. This is going to be a special one because this will be out on a Saturday, mainly due to the crowdfunding site that's going to come up pretty soon for this film that we're going to talk about. But I am here with Ash Hamilton, who is one of the producers and, I guess, creators and a writer. Did you write this as well?
Yes, yeah, I'm one of two co-writers, yes.
Awesome. So, Old Splitfoot versus the Lesbian Nuns. How do you say this? Like,
I'm going to take a deep breath. Okay. And I'm going to get through this. So, it's the true tale of Old Splitfoot versus the Lesbian Warrior Nuns of the Great White North.
Oh, good God. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mouthful. Yeah.
That would definitely not fit on a marquee these days, you know, or whatever.
No. Yeah, we won't have any Burger King tie-ins. There's no way they'd be able to promote it outside of the sign. So,
Burger King. Yeah, I'm pretty sure once you say Lesbian Warrior Nuns, that Burger King's probably out by then.
But, you know, I think that Burger King, it was either Burger King or one of the other fast food franchises, had collector's cups for The Boys, the Amazon original series, The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they just were sort of catching the tail end of the whole superhero craze. And I don't think anyone at like Burger King corporate had seen a single episode, because I'm in the drive through and I'm like, how in the world is like Burger King promoting The Boys? I'm like, the show is gleefully filthy, but there's no way like a major fast food franchise would be supporting it. So I love it when shit like that sort of gets under the radar.
Well, yeah, especially when it's Hollywood. When it's Hollywood, I mean, there's not really many shows like The Boys or stuff like that, because Hollywood is too scared that, you know, generally speaking, that it's going to turn off audiences, you know, because, you know, when you make like a Hollywood movie, you're thinking about like a broad, you know, general audience. You're not thinking of like a select niche group. That's why like cult films like this film would be, you know, fun. Because, you know, there is a calling for people who enjoy that. Just by the title alone, people are going to check it out, you know.
Oh, that's definitely what we were hoping for. And we've had a pretty favorable response so far, just based on having a goofy-ass long title. What I love is I love giving people the title and then them automatically saying, so what is it about? I'm like, well, a lot of it is actually in the title. It's like, luckily, the synopsis and the title are the same length. So we can just copy and paste. Like we've got it lucky.
It's the same length as the title. That's funny.
Yeah, it's like, this is definitely, it's definitely about this, you know, entity Splitfoot, and it's definitely about lesbian warrior nuns, and it definitely takes place in the Great White North.
All right.
We've got all our exposition taken care of right in the title.
So, you know, it's not one of those trick titles where the movie doesn't actually turn out anything like the way that, like, there's a movie that I love that hasn't even come out ever, and I don't think it will, due to the fact that it was it was called Big Helium Dog. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it was.
I have heard of it. I have not seen it.
I have seen it because I went to like Volgerthon, where the Kevin Smith Film Festival, and Kevin Smith produced it. And in the trailer and even in the movie, there's a bit where Michael Ian Black from like The State and everything's in it.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a bit where he says like, Big Helium Dog, what's that about? You know, right? And Kevin Smith's the quote unquote director of that, you know, thing. And he was like, it just sounds cool. Not everything, not every title has to mean something, you know, right? And he's like, yeah, I acknowledge that. But generally in film, the title has to do with the content of the film. And that's perfect for you guys, because like that seems to be exactly what the title, like you can't look at that and go, you know, the tale of old, you know, Splitfoot versus the, you know, what is that about? Like, you really can't do, if people do that, they're just silly if they're not like listening to the title.
There's no bait and switch here. Like, you're not going to sit down and get like, you know, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants too. Like we're doing nothing as far as like trickery. There's no skullduggery here with the title. Like you are going to get lesbian. If you look at the title and you're like, ooh, Lesbian Warrior Nuns, and you then see the movie, you will indeed get a healthy helping of Lesbian Warrior Nuns. So.
I love, by the way, that we're both wearing 80s movie shirts right now. By the way, mine is Christmas Story. You know, you'll shoot your eye out, and yours is RoboCop. That is awesome.
Yeah, you know? The more I think about RoboCop, the more and it's like there's no secret that people love RoboCop. You know, I'm not like coming out of the RoboCop closet here on the show. Like I'm a RoboCop fan. Like everybody pretty much universally likes it to one degree or another. But like the more I revisit it, the more I find things about it that I like that, you know, I probably never knew that I liked when I was a kid, you know, themes and like undercurrents and stuff that I never knew was there. And then as I get older, I'm like, oh, that's like delightfully smarter than I thought it was. And here I just liked it for the ultra violence back in the day. But it's like, oh, I like it for so many more reasons now. I just love the movie.
Yeah. Well, that is so freaking true, because I've noticed a lot of 80s movies have a little bit of what was I watching? I was watching something recently that I was like, oh my God, I never noticed that before as a kid. You know, like when you're a kid, you're not thinking about like adult situations or adult stuff, you know, or maybe you just laugh because it's everybody else is laughing kind of thing, but you don't really get it. Middle
laugh track. Yeah.
Yeah. You just don't really get it. And you're like, oh, that's sort of funny. I guess. I don't know what that joke is, but you know what I mean? And then I look at it later, I'm like, wow, that was filthy for like a, you know, a kid's film or something, you know, or whatever. Like,
oh yeah. And the 80s was full of that, like absolutely full of that. And I think that's probably one thing that we love about it was that it's strange because it's like innocence in disguise. You know, like there was this idea that we didn't know how filthy it was, you know, or we didn't, I guess, have the context for it. So, yeah, we knew it was filthy, but we didn't know it was that filthy. And then we revisit it later and we're like, man, the 80s were dirty. Like they were just dirty. They'll cling to you. They're so dirty, but you love it anyways.
I know, which is really funny because I think the 90s really was the start of like this kind of downward spiral of like, being trying to be safer, you know, with everything. Like, oh, you know, let's not make another Porky's movie because, you know, nobody would, you know, dare do that. Like Mallrats, you know.
Oh yeah.
Mallrats was great, you know, fantastic 90s film. However, I mean, I'm sure they could have gone like even raunchier. But they, every movie kind of like all Hollywood, they always tried to play it safe. You know what I mean?
Oh, we got weird. Like we got really, really weird. And I think we got really weird because we started to look too heavy at marketing. Like I think the marketing like swooped in and became something much, much different. Like, you know, marketing in the 80s was, you know, how can all these people see what we have? Because we already have it. Like we already have this idea, we already have this product, and marketing is the channel to which we distribute it and people get to see it and people get to love it. And, you know, people sort of make it their own and adopt it. And then you start getting into the 90s and, you know, everything was just a little more accessible, you know, even like pre-internet accessibility was different. You know, we started to have more like big box retail stores that had huge promotions. The mom and pop places were sort of dying out. So the marketing and advertising that you saw was sort of across the board with all these franchises and retail stores. And suddenly it was like, oh, well, we sort of have to market this thing and then have this thing sort of fit the marketing because we don't want it to hit the wrong demo. And then if it hits the wrong demo, we're gonna fall on our ass and we're gonna lose our money. It just became a really weird thing. Not as if we weren't ever thinking about money, because everyone always is, unfortunately, but I think it became something much, much different where the product was the marketing and the idea and the creative aspect was maybe more of an afterthought. I know that's pessimistic, but it sounds that way sometimes to me.
Well, I think that's what's great about indie films, you know, these days is like, I mean, the marketing for indie films is like basically how outrageous can you go, you know, because you don't have that, you know, you don't have that hold on, you know, like, I mean, when you give a distributor the film, it's generally like, you know, well, you're doing Indiegogo, so you're raising the money through crowdfunding, which is a great way for independent filmmakers to do it. But once you get that money, I mean, you just got to get them the perks and everything and stuff, and maybe fly them out for a cameo or whatever it is. You know, you have to give them that perk. When you're in when there's an investment, you know, they're wanting a return on investment. You know, when you're doing crowdfunding, you don't need a return on investment. You know, you just need to have enough, you know, left over from, you know, the things to just give everybody what they asked for, you know?
Yeah. We're in an interesting situation because we sort of dip into both camps where we have some funding from different resources. And then we have the Indiegogo. And I think the Indiegogo for us is an opportunity to try to reclaim as much control of the film as possible. And that's sort of, this is like sort of our last ditch effort so that I'm not just sitting there a year from now watching my movie going, oh, that's different. I like what he did there. I like what he didn't do there. Like, this is just all an attempt to get me to actually still be involved with it like a year from now. But like, the more money we raise, the more we are sort of considered stakeholders. Unfortunately, it's like if it's all just either private investment or, you know, secured funding through different resources, then you really do unfortunately lose a lot of that control.
I do have a book on crowdfunding. I would suggest, but I can't figure out the title of it right now. It's by John Tregonis. He actually was a he's a crowdfunder, you know, and everything. And he wrote a book on how he, you know, how he did it, like strategic stuff. And I would recommend it, but I mean, obviously you don't have to, you know, like you don't have to do anything. You don't have to like look at it or not, but it's called Crowdfunding for Filmmakers, the Way to a Successful Film Campaign. And it's definitely helped me throughout when I was crowdfunding for a project and everything. So I would recommend it for anybody, especially if anybody else out there wants to crowdfund and everything for their film, which there's a lot of it going on still, you know?
And I am the kind of person that I honestly appreciate you giving me any suggestions and advice, because I don't want to sit here and tell anybody that I know 100% of what, you know, we need to do. We have good ideas and, you know, we think we have a good foothold, but I'm always open to finding information that I don't already have. And exactly. I would hate to think that I'm just a stagnant person who just sits here really full of myself and be like, oh, I've read all the books. It's like, anytime that I can get more information, it's always appreciated.
Yeah, definitely. I'm the same way too. I like to read up on things that I'm interested in. And when it especially comes to like stuff that I don't understand, like crowdfunding or even doing podcasts, you know, I love reading books on podcasts or watching YouTube video tutorials and things, because a lot of times there's just something that I may not be thinking that way, you know, that other people, you know, might have had a better grasp on it, you know, than I do.
Yeah. I've been doing the podcasting thing on and off since, oh geez, and this always dates me horribly, since like probably 2004.
Oh, wow.
Off and on. Yeah. And
been doing it longer than I have.
I was doing it the same way for years and years and years. And I was always encountering the same pitfalls and the same obstacles. And it was always just refine my process. And then like 2 or 3 months ago, I was just in a Facebook group for podcasters. And I saw a piece of equipment on this guy's desk, because everyone was taking pictures of their home office, which mine just looks like a toy store, but everybody's was really nice and clean and, you know, a lot of white stuff, you know, it was like really nice. And I'm like, I've got a lot of xenomorphs in the background. And I looked at this guy's desk and I'm like, I don't know what that piece of equipment is. You know, I was on like an Alesis mixer and I had my, my vocal processor, and then I had my headphone amplifiers and everything like that. And he just had this unit, and I was looking at it, and luckily it was a high enough resolution picture that I just grabbed the photo and I zoomed in to like get model numbers and everything. And just from that one photo, like I totally changed the way that I do everything now, just from that mm-hmm. one photo. It's like, I never want to quit learning to the point where I'm so stubborn that I keep doing the wrong things over and over again because I'm so resistant to change. I just can't agree with that kind of mentality. Too many people subscribe to that in their lives, I think.
Well, yeah, and that's another thing I think. I feel like, you know, it's very true. Like, it's when I was first doing it, I was doing it on Blog Talk Radio and doing it through phone. I don't know if you're familiar with Blog Talk or not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was doing it through phone, and I mean, all in all, the stuff sounded fine. It didn't sound worse until years later, because my phone, I need a new phone. So, you know, recently doing it on there was just, it didn't give the same feeling, because you know, my phone, my phone's having issues, you know,
right.
Unless I'm talking into like a microphone or something, or a headset. So anyway, the point was that I was doing it for so long on there, and then we were creating Indie Film Cafe, which is, this is going to be on Indie Film Cafe. And while we were doing Indie Film Cafe, I was like, we want to do something different. We didn't want to do it on Blog Talk, because Blog Talk only lets you pay extra. It only lets you do like 45 minutes. And then it's got a, you know, I got a cap on how long, how many episodes you can do for only 45 minutes for free. So we were like, what can we do? And we're like, oh, we'll pay $15 or whatever, $14 a month, and do Podbean, you know? And we looked into how many different ways we could do it. We bought little microphones. I've got this one that's sort of new, you know, works perfectly. Actually cheaper than the other one I had. This is like a $20 microphone, and it sounds clearer than like a $50 one I got.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it, but I'm not complaining. you know, so I was just like, you know, I'm constantly trying to do new things, you know, and make something, you know, better. You know what I mean? Like, you have to constantly be doing that.
We have to, you know, because, and I don't really want to say that the market is extremely competitive, even though it is. Like, in my mind, I always sort of hate talking about how competitive things are, because it's like I want to try to get out of that way of thinking, where I'm always using words like competition. Like, I think we're probably much more supportive of one another than people think we are in this world. But you know, there's so many people doing it that, you know, you've got people who unfortunately are really good at it, but whether it's just growing pains or, you know, you hit a financial bump sometimes, you know, you lose a piece of equipment that's your primary piece of equipment, and all of a sudden it sets you back a month or whatever, you know. So you have to sort of keep up with what's happening and what's sort of right around the corner, because it really is easy to get stuck in this idea of what you do and how you do it. And, you know, if you're not flexible enough, I mean, we're in a world where essentially, you know, we're all just a few paychecks away from hard times. So
exactly.
You get one piece of equipment that you rely on, you know, for 4 or 5 years, and then all of a sudden that piece of equipment is gone, and you've never really investigated how to do it differently. You don't really know your options. Yeah, I mean, that can, there can be some suffering there. There can be some long nights. And I mean, I've done that in the past, you know, sort of my eyes to it too.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. Especially like if you're just used to doing it one way, like I was with Blog Talk, you know, I was used to doing it that way. And I created other shows on Blog Talk, like Frights of the Round Table was a Blog Talk show for a while. And, you know, it's just easier originally to get people like yourself who isn't, you know, around me, you know, or whatever. I can't do an interview with you in person. Yeah. I mean, I could, but it would cost a lot of money, you know?
Yeah, like, we just meet halfway.
We'd have to meet halfway, but then that still costs money for both of you
and
me.
We would find, now I've got the best idea anyways. So I'm a huge fan of the book American Gods, even though I really like the show too. Mm-hmm. But I really like the book, and I love this idea of the last few places, because let's face it, this country is becoming extremely homogenized. But I love the idea of finding like these last few pieces of Americana and like the power that these things have. Like, you and I should find a place in America that is truly unique. And that's where we'll meet halfway. So we won't, we'll still spend way too much money, but we'll find a cool place like maybe the world's largest cheese factory or something, you know, where they hand out free cheese samples. And then the novelty is that we visited the world's largest cheese factory or something like that. Something similar.
That's a pretty cool idea. That's even a cool idea for like a concept for a podcast, like going to these different places, you know, and
before they're gone, right?
Before they're gone. Yeah. I mean, right now we're living in a, like, yeah, you said earlier, hard time. So who knows how long a lot of these places are going to still last, you know? A lot of places are opening up, but then a lot of other places still haven't, you know? So it's scary, you know, to think like the world's largest cheese factory might be, you know, gone, you know, or
it's
whatever.
It's scary to think that I never visited it.
Right.
It's like, here's to all the days where we sat there, like when we were 19 years old and told ourselves like, I'm going to jerk off for an entire morning. That morning is lost because we did not go to the largest cheese factory now.
Well, you know, and that goes to,
although mind you, that was a pretty good morning. I'm just saying,
Well, I mean, you know, you have to do things to make yourself happy, you know, so. Yeah,
and it's
a
calorie burner.
But my thing is, also not to go into like a more morbid, side of it, but, there's a lot of people I haven't met, you know, that I would love to freaking meet who unfortunately, like, okay, so I was at a convention in 2013 and I was so excited to be there, you know, and I was going around meeting as many people as I could. And I was at Richard Brooker's, table, but his, like, he had too long of a line. So I was like, you know, I'll see him at another show. He died like right after that, you know, right after that convention. So I never got to, you know, right. And I kind of always kicked myself because now I'm like, I hate to say this, but if they're older, you know, guests or whatever, those are the people I want to meet right now, you know, cause I may not get the chance, you know, at another convention, who knows? Once again, it sounds very morbid, but it's sort of kind of true.
Well, you know, Hollywood in itself is a cruel mistress. I mean, you know, it's the land of people being taken before their prime. So, you know, even if they're not old, it's just like, you know, sort of part of this all-inclusive Hollywood curse. It's like too many fast cars, you know, too many parties or whatever, but you never know. And that is a weird thing. It is a weird thing to think about all these people that we, you know, had near misses with. You know, that we could have had great conversations with, or we could have developed lifelong friendships, or even if it was just a 10-minute conversation that stuck with you, who knows?
Yeah, no, definitely. There are a lot of people who I still would love to meet that I know that I might never ever meet, you know. I would love to meet Bill Murray. You know, he's on my bucket list of people I would definitely love to, you know, be honored to meet. I mean, all I would do is shake his hand and tell him I loved him in almost every freaking movie in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, like him, you know, a ton of other people, but I just haven't had that, you know. I mean, you can't meet everybody. So, you know.
Some of the best meetings I've had have been the accidental ones. Like there have been periods in my life where I've flown a lot. Like I was just on planes a lot. So I spent a lot of time in airports.
Mm-hmm.
And those were some of the best like accidental meetings that I had with like celebrities was just being in an airport often enough that it just stands to reason that these people fly a lot. And I was flying a lot at some point in time, like crunching the numbers, I was just going to meet somebody. And some of the best like accidental meetings I've had have been at airports. Ron Perlman, who was extremely nice, was, I think, Boston Airport? No, I can't remember.
I thought I saw Ron Perlman at the airport, but I'm not sure. I couldn't tell. You know, it was a really tall dude with gray hair, and I thought it might have been him, but I just wasn't sure. So I was a little I was a little hesitant to walk up. I wasn't going to walk up because the dude was already upset at somebody because like we were waiting in a huge ass line, you know, to get through security. It was in Texas. And it did make sense because he was at a convention, I think, or whatever, because I went to the Texas Frightmare. So he was either at Frightmare or he was at another one, you know, that was right then at the same time. So I knew he was around. So like that could very well be him, but I don't want to like walk up and be like, Mr. Perlman, you know, how are you doing? You know, right? I would never call him by his first name. But, you know, I didn't. And the one meeting I was really, like, embarrassed by, or not embarrassed, but, like super, like, nervous, was Sam Raimi, you know.
Oh, okay.
When I got to meet him last year, he was super nice, you know, as nice as I imagined him being. But, like, I was, like, shaking, you know, like, to, and he was just super cool about it. He was, like, a gentleman, you know, and stuff, and wore a suit when he was taking everybody's picture, which he's very known for doing, even on sets.
And oh, yeah.
So yeah,
he's always very well dressed.
He's very well dressed. He says stuff about, like, he's kind of the same way as Anthony Michael Hall likes to dress, you know, to suit up at conventions and stuff. So, and he told me once that it was because he likes to look professional, you know, or whatever, you know. So many people don't, you know, at conventions because it's a convention, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to.
Like, I wish I had the ambition, like, to dress nicely. for whatever, you know, even if it's just like, I'm gonna go to a different grocery store today, I'm gonna wear that crushed velvet blazer that's been in the closet for the last 15 years.
You should do
that.
It
day
you
has
should,
not come.
Well, you should do it on set of Old Splitfoot. You should definitely.
I should break out a couple smoking jackets or something, you know.
You know, and then everybody be like, that's the producer, you know. Yeah, you can,
like,
tell
this idiot over here. You know, doing the poor Hugh Hefner impersonation, that is our producer. I have definitely got to call my representation.
You know what? That's the poor man's Hugh Hefner. There you go. I like it.
And I don't have much of a filter anyways, in case you couldn't guess. So it's like, I'm a completely different kind of asshole. Like, a lot of people are traditional assholes. You know, they just do asshole-ish things. Not saying that I'm not immune to that.
Right.
Like, if you were to ask my wife, she'd be like, oh no, he can totally do asshole things. But in typical asshole-ish things. But I just have, like, the, like, I laugh at way too much. And sometimes I don't realize that it's inappropriate laughter.
Right.
And that occasionally makes me an asshole. I also have the ability to come into the middle of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
If I hear something that I'm interested in, without any kind of invitation or being provoked.
Right.
And then, like, I'm in it and they don't know me, but, and they're like, this guy's sort of an asshole. Like, he's,
right.
He sort of commandeered our conversation, and that's a little asshole-ish. So.
Well, you know, at least you know, right? Like, you know.
I have a brand of self-awareness about the shit that I do, yes.
So there you go. At least, you know, at least you can correct that if you feel like you need to.
Yeah, all I can really do is just, like, a cartoonish shoulder shrug, you know, if somebody's like, that was such an asshole move.
Oh, well. Yeah, you look more like one of those avatars now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Avatars on Facebook, you know. Because there's only so many things that they can do with you. But
yeah, and I'm like a bald guy with facial hair, so it's like I am an identical avatar to probably 98% of men over 45 on Facebook right now.
People are complaining about the avatars, and I think that's just silly. Like, everybody has something to complain about on Facebook. It's insane.
It's like that's my love-hate relationship with America, is the fact that, like, it's so ridiculous that we're complaining over a artistic representation of ourselves that's free. But then I'm like, oh my God, this is hilarious. And this is one reason I love living in this country, is because we are complaining about an artistic representation of ourselves that's free. It's like a love-hate thing with me. I love to hate the idea of people complaining about ridiculous stuff.
Well, let's say it's the internet. Because, like, somebody was saying, a writer was one saying that Peter Russell, who he does, like, he's on that show Film Courage sometimes, and he's a really cool person to, like, listen to. I've interviewed him before, and he's just really nice, and I've taken his writing class actually too, so he definitely knows his shit. But he was talking about how people don't, okay, so if you took a picture of your room and wanted to post it on Facebook, right, You would probably clean it up a little bit. You would make sure it looks good, you know, right? But nobody would dare, like, go to their room and just take a picture of their messy room and post it on Facebook. And it's so true. Like, everything we do is sort of a lie in a way on the internet. We don't mean to, but we kind of, like, anything we say or do, you know what I mean? Like, if you look at the room, look at my room right now. It's messy as shit. I am not going to show you that, you know, because I don't want people to see that side of it, you know, even right. if it's like a friend, I would rather make it look neat and clean. And then, you know, and then when you leave, I dirty it up again, you know?
Right.
right. But that's like, that's the way the internet is like, well, you know, everything's so fake, you know, fake friendships and stuff too, because not everybody knows, you know, what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, private messaging can get you in a lot of trouble, you know, with whatever, you know, somebody says something to somebody, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And it's just, it's so, we live in such a weird society that, like, a lot of people don't want to even be on Facebook or social media anymore because it's just like destroying friendships and relationships and things because of it.
Like, we're horrible, filthy animals anyways. Like we right. really are. Like, you know, all we really do 24 hours a day is just try not to appeal to our basic instincts. Like, we're just struggling. It's all a struggle. You know, yeah. It's heart of darkness. That's all. Our entire lives as humans is just heart of darkness. That's all it is. So, yeah, you get to a place where people think that, and it's weird because I don't see the internet as a tool for anonymity. Like, I don't see it as, ooh, now I can hide in the shadows, anything I want. Like, I almost see it as, like, I got to tiptoe on the shit because everybody's watching. And, you know, it's like, I obviously can accidentally say stuff that people don't like, but, you know, you can really say stuff that people don't like in a social media forum. And even if it's meant to be comedic, or even if you're just trying to be lighthearted, it's like all it takes is just one person to misinterpret it and run with it, and then, you know, all of a sudden you're kicked off of the next Marvel directing gig, or you know it.
Yeah. I know who you're referring to, which he got reinstated back from Disney to come back for part three, but
and that's the last American justice we'll have, by the way. That's it.
Yeah,
that's the last justice story of America.
Maybe. I have this feeling like, you know, there's going to be a precedent on, you know, because I think Disney sort of learned that, like, they just got to be careful who they hire, period. You know, that there is going to be a little bit of that, you know, because they hired James Gunn, the dude who wrote fucking Romeo and Juliet. One of my favorite trauma movies, by the way, but... like, it's a trauma movie. He wrote fucking trauma movies.
He's got some career baggage, you know, as far as what Disney would, you know, be concerned with.
Right. I mean, he did Scooby-Doo 1 and 2, but, like, if you even look at those are very dark for, like, kid films and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Velma and Daphne are still too sexy for a kid's movie.
Yeah. Well, you put Sarah Michelle Gellar and Linda Cardellini in a, you know, in a movie together, you know, I mean, come on now.
Like, I'm trying to watch it with my kid, but, you know, my brain goes to completely different places.
I know. This is the Scooby-Doo porno there for you.
It is. It is. And, like, thank you, internet.
I wonder if there is one. I'm sure somebody's made.
Can I just go ahead and say that through my nightly travels down various different rabbit holes, I can say beyond the shadow of a doubt that, yes, there is a Scooby-Doo parody porn.
Oh, God.
yeah, there is. Yeah, oh, and there's enough that, oh, like, this is totally incriminating. There's enough that you can sort of pick and choose which ones you feel maybe are a little more character accurate.
Oh, okay.
So you're like, I don't quite like this Velma. Let me do a couple more random searches. Oh, wait a second. I think that's my Velma. There's enough can cherry pick.
Scooby-Doo pornos. All right. Well, yeah, good to know.
There's enough that you can cherry pick. That's my contribution to this interview, by the way.
Yeah. So anybody wants to go out and look on Google for
Or Scooby-Doo. Instant message me and maybe save yourself 3 or 4 hours.
Because you'll find, because you know exactly where it is. Do you have them bookmarked?
I'll help you get some sleep. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and I'll share my Chrome account.
That is so funny.
For anyone who wants to flirt with litigation, I will share my Chrome account.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. So you said you've been podcasting for since 2004. Jesus, that's oh God, 16 years? Yeah, 16 years. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I've been doing it since 2006, so I'm not too far behind you.
Right.
But I didn't even know what podcasting was for the longest time. Like, I had no idea that this thing even, I didn't know you could talk on the radio except if you like went into journalism or something, you know, or whatever, you know, like I thought you had to actually go to school for radio. Then I discovered you can actually do your own shows and be the host. And I think that's what God bless the internet has really, really done for everybody is like, you know, you can be your own filmmaker these days. You just need the right equipment and everything. You can, you know, used to have to like go up the ranks or, you know, do a lot of stuff, but now you can just shoot a movie for like $500. And,
it's insane. You know, yeah. It's insane. It's great insanity, but it's insane. Yeah. Yeah. So let me get in my own rabbit hole here for a second, like 2004, 2005. So I was an avid listener of Art Bell's show, Coast to Coast. Like I loved Coast to Coast. I loved the idea of, you know, turning a radio on at midnight, you know, and, you know, sort of following the chain of conspiracy theories to hit the 3 or 4 o'clock mark and you're equally exhausted and paranoid and you drift off to sleep. So I loved Art Bell. I love Coast to Coast. And that was sort of actually what got me into doing this. And even though mainly I talk about horror films now and filmmaking and stuff in general, is that way back in the day it was, I really wanted to sit around with a few of my friends and just talk about whatever fringe stuff came to mind, you know, whether it was Bigfoot or UFOs or whatever. And our shtick was that we also really liked like microbrew beers, and you know, by like the second hour, you know, we became unintentionally a lot funnier. But yeah, that was sort of, you know, I guess the reason. And again, what you were saying was true. It was like there wasn't really this label on what we were trying to do back then. It was just, oh hey, there's technology,
right?
And we might as well take advantage of the technology. And now it's become, God, you know, now it's become so huge. I mean, it's one of those staple internet industries, you know, it's synonymous with the internet. It's crazy.
It's so funny because like when I first started, I was doing it all by myself, you know, like doing it through Blog Talk, getting guests, you know, my first guest, I've mentioned this on a few other podcasts recently, but my first guest was Brett Kelly. He's a Canadian filmmaker who did like a movie called The Bone Setter and you know, The Feral Man and a lot of other movies since then. He's made a ton. And back then he had just a few movies in Blockbuster, you know, Blockbuster, that's how long ago it was. You know, that existed. And now only one exists and it's
yeah, well, you know, that's weird to think, right?
Well, only one exists and it's like, you know, having problems with because of COVID, and that sucks, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, the point was that I was doing it all by myself, and I was so lucky to get all these guests who called in and talked to me when they didn't have to, you know. But it wasn't until like years later that I actually tried to get a co-host. You know, I mean, I might have had like a temporary co-host for like a week or something or a day or whatever, you know, like per episode, like maybe one or whatever. But looking back at it, I was like, I really did everything on my own. And I was very surprised, you know, that I did that because, you know, there's so many times that I could have just been like, eh, you know, like I'm just gonna give up because being on my own didn't really do a lot of things. But I did for 10 years on Blog Talk for Independent Corner Radio Show. And now it's here on Indie Film Cafe as Indie Corner Radio Show. So
you put yourself out there by doing it by yourself. You know, there's quite a bit less of a safety net, you know, there are those days where, you know, you've got stuff scheduled. Maybe you're just not really feeling it, which happens. You know, it happens to all of us. Like, no matter how excited you might be about a guest, you know, there's just going to be a day when you crank everything up and you get in front of that microphone and you're like, I'm a blank. I'm a blank slate today. How am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to carry a conversation? You know, that's scary stuff, especially when you're by yourself.
Definitely. Well, let's talk more about Old Split Foot, because that's really what we were here for. But we kind of went on our own little tangents and little talks and stuff, which is great.
It was that Scooby-Doo porn every time.
Every time. Gets you every time. Yeah. So Old Split Foot, and that's what I'm going to call it from now on, because the title is way too long.
It's so much easier. That's even what, like, the production crew basically calls it at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's either that or lesbian nuns, lesbian warrior nuns, you know.
Which is also a favorite of many.
Yeah. So it just depends on which way you want to go with it. But I think Old Split Foot
conversation, Old Split Foot gets less stares from old ladies. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. You know, even though there might be a split foot. Well, why is he old? You know. can you tell us a little bit more? Like, is there anything that you can actually say about the film that, like, might intrigue people?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, first of all, just from sort of a logistics perspective, like, we have it's a large cast. Strangely enough, it's a large cast of a lot of, I think, very distinct and very funny roles. You know, it is definitely a horror comedy with a very strong slant towards the comedy. Even though the horror is there and it's very gory, which we really wanted to do because that's sort of where my heart's always been. But you know, as far as writing, I find it easier for me to write comedy than to write horror. I think because I watch so much horror, I'm much more self-critical, you know, and I always feel like I'd be writing a bad horror movie, but I feel like I could write a good comedy with some good horror in it. But essentially what we have is we have this order of warrior nuns called the Sisters of the Crooked Cross. And they've been around for a while. They're actually part of this secret Canadian sect of the Catholic Church, and they've based a lot of what they do and where they're at on this guy who's, like, not a good prophet. Like, he's not a good seer at all and really hasn't got anything right, but he gets one thing right, and that is that the end of the world is going to take place at a very rural sort of hole-in-the-wall strip club in the wilds of Canada called the Beaver Dam. And we have some undercover lesbian warrior nuns that are there that have been waiting for the apocalypse. And they've been waiting so long that now, like, they've got horrible coke habits. And, like, they're a shadow of their former selves. So they're a little bit more of their aliases than their true selves now. Like, that line has been blurred for so long. And, you know, just when they think that their life is basically nothing more than having to fend off horny Canadian men, who I'm sure are all very, very polite too, by the way. They end up, hey buddy, Hey, I'll be in just a second, pal. So, so of course this is the conversation he walks in on too. And what ends up happening is that when they really think that, you know, there's nothing more than them just sort of succumbing to the idea of being these career strippers, is that the mother of the Antichrist, the unwitting mother of the Antichrist, sort of stumbles and falls into their lap. And the whole thing takes place over one night. So it's really sort of this pivotal night. I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel so much with the story as we're trying to have a horror comedy that is big on dialogue. And you really sort of follow the characters through all the exposition, through all the action and everything. So that in a nutshell is pretty much it. It's a struggle between good and evil amidst a ton of dildo and STD jokes.
Nice. Tell us about the cast that you have so far. Like, who are some of the bigger, like, names that are attached to this film?
So we have Michael Paré, who is a big win for me because I'm a huge fan of the Philadelphia Experiment. I'm also a huge fan of the Cruisers, Streets of Fire. Recently, I love Bone Tomahawk, which Paré was in Bone Tomahawk, and he's still making tons of films. And like, he's just such a like a hard ass kind of guy. Like, you know, he's one of those, you know, like straight jawed, you know, man's man kind of actors. So Michael Paré is with us. So is Robert Lissardo from Clint Eastwood's The Mule and Nip Tuck and CSI Miami. Like, Robert's been involved in tons of projects. And he's so recognizable. I mean, he really...
He's got a look, you know,
to him. He definitely has a look. And he's like the sweetest guy on the face of the planet. He's such a nice guy. And we have Bishop Stevens, who is in Bloodthirst and just a ton of other stuff.
I've seen his name all around. Like, he's doing a lot of movies. So good for him, man. Like, and good for him getting, you know, being in your movie too. So that's awesome.
And he's again another guy that's just like, I love talking to these people, not so much because of their craft and what they're bringing to it, but they're genuinely like really good, nice people. And then we have a ton of people attached to it. We also have Rebecca Reinhart, who is from The Embalmers and has been in the horror scene and a very prominent voice in the horror scene. And she's going to be playing the character of Nat.
She's also a podcaster as well. So that's awesome.
Yeah, she is. And, you know, and she's got like much better assets than I do as far as being on video on podcasts.
Yeah.
So it would have been great if she could have just like lip synced my part today and then people could have just seen Rebecca do it. She's much better looking than I am.
And she also does the hot tub podcast.
I know, right? Thing.
Like, that's just smart.
It's like, you man, know? If I didn't hate myself, I'd be doing that too.
Well, but, you know, I mean, you probably still could if you wanted to, or maybe you'll do one with her, you know, to promote this, you know, or whatever.
I would just look like Irish stew, just very pale with a lot of hot water. It's like, I don't even know what kind of food we're making, but it's going to be tasteless anyways. So we have Rebecca Reinhart. We have Max Cook. Now, Max is an interesting guy and a personal friend of mine for years who I was on a podcast with out of LA years and years ago. And Max Cook has done voiceover work for years. He's been in a ton of video games as voiceovers. And one of his stranger claims to fame is that Max Cook is the voice of Chester Cheetah. So,
wow.
Yeah, Chester Cheetah is in our film. Isn't that interesting?
Are you going to get him to do the voice at all or anything? Or Kenny? And I guess he can't really, right?
I don't know, like... If he can, if he's able to, you know, I don't know if we'll just have to sort of plant cameras and wait for it to happen. You know,
so, like, it might just slip.
And he might slip and it's like, there it is. And then there's our viral video of him saying something absolutely filthy in the Chester Cheetah voice.
I interviewed Larry Kinney once, a couple times. And Larry is like such a nice guy. But the first time I interviewed him, he was explaining to me how he did the podcast for for Lino. He was explaining to me how he did Lino, and basically he said it was his voice, except it was just over exaggerated. So instead of saying hello, you know, hello Jonathan, how are you doing today, like, hello Jonathan, you know, right? And I was like, that's just a simple freaking like thing, you know, like, I mean, how incredibly awesome is that, you know?
I'd be doing that all the time. Like, I don't think I'd go back to my regular voice if I was the voice of Lino. Like, forget it.
You just
like, everyone drive-thrus, they'd know who I was. I'd be doing the drive-thru voice and Lino, everything. My kid's school would hate me. But yeah, so, and sorry, like, I digress. But so Max Cook is Chester Cheetah. He plays the character of Randy. We also have Kaylee Williams, who joined the cast about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kaylee, who's, she's got like 63 credits on IMDb. It's crazy. We have Gene Young. So Gene Young is an interesting addition, and she's playing Dee. We also have, do you remember, Julie Ann Prescott is playing Crazy. Like, they all have their names and then their stripper names.
Okay.
So while Kaylee is CeCe, she is also Fantasy. Gene Young is Dee, who is also Double Delicious. So just bringing the class is what we're trying to do here.
Well, I mean, it's funny that they're actually their real names, or what their real character names are, also like into their stripper names or whatever, which is hilarious, you know, because generally that's not what strippers do. They tend to take something completely different than what they are.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, the fact that they're these like these nuns, like they just didn't really know how to do it when they first got there. So it's like they sort of went against the grain and did it their own way.
Well, hey, you know, 100 points for originality. Hold on 1 second, okay?
There's, yeah, no problem.
Jackie,
there's
something.
Oh.
Hey, Jackie, there's something in the
All right. Sorry about that.
Oh, hey, it's no problem. Like, my kid is probably wanting a snack earlier.
Yeah, you know.
As I'm trying to, like, push him out of here, like, actually physically push him, people are going to be like, God, you see what he did to his kid?
Well, hey, you know, the beauty is this is, you know, this is going to be through, you know, through the audio, not video. So nobody will see
oh,
that.
Oh, great. Oh, I should have smacked him around a little bit then. Damn it.
I will probably still leave all of this in here just because why the hell not?
He needs to learn a lesson so badly, I swear. God damn it. I'll get him back down here. And then we have there's so many people involved with this. Like, sometimes it's difficult, and I know I'm like missing people, but see, there's Kaylee, Gene Young, Max Cook, Bishop, there's Rebecca, there's Michael, there's Robert, and then Julie. And then we've got two that we can't officially announce yet.
Right.
But I'm hoping that we'll have a release for them. I'm hoping by tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So by the time this airs, they'll probably be attached. It's like, and I wish it was 100% because I'd sort of love to talk about it. But
yeah, cool. Well, there you go. Expect that you might see some, you know, exciting news coming. Talk to me about the crew. Like, tell me a little bit about the crew that you guys got.
So we've got Max Cherokee directing, and Max has been around for about 26 years directing films, and everybody knows him. Like, everybody just knows who Max is. So he'll be directing. We've got, and I'm pretty sure I can say, if not, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure that we have John Azuna. He'll be doing the fight choreography for us. We have myself. I'm the executive producer and co-writer, as well as Ben Harrell. Ben Harrell is a Illinois-based filmmaker. He's responsible for a feature called Ain't No Sunshine, as well as Story of the Year. He owns his own production company called Silver Compass Studios. He is the other executive producer and the co-writer.
All right.
We have my wife, who was actually coming on as producer because I'm extremely absent-minded and I need,
and she's like, yeah, she knows how to remind you of these things, right?
Yeah, like, she's commonly referred to as like the handler. Just when like I'm like off the rails and they're like, nope, just go get him, go bring him back.
That's funny.
We have Laura Richter, who is one of our producers. We have Samantha Marie, who is also one of our producers, who is doing a great job with a lot of our social media today. She's been pushing a lot of stuff.
She's been doing that a lot lately, which is great. She definitely knows how to do that. And so for you know, to have somebody like that under your wing, you know, we know, because both of us work with her, you know, she's a partner for my company and everything, but she, you know, not exclusive to my company ever, you know, so I always love to see her helping out other production companies, especially ones that deserve, you know, some help or whatever, deserve some, you know, getting things out there or whatever, you know?
She's great. We were extremely lucky to be able to have Samantha on with us.
And she was the one who got us the interview the last time for Theo. You know, basically, and part of your podcast / your website. So, I mean, you're busy, dude. I mean, you have a website, you have a podcast, and you do, and you have your own production company. You're just like me, you know, we're you know, like always constantly doing, well, your website's a little bigger than any of my websites, but you know,
we'll all sleep one day. One day we'll all get a full night's sleep. I don't know when that's going to happen, but it'll happen
someday.
It'll happen one day. Yeah.
One day, yeah. Which is great. I love that you're able to go out there and you know, you can sleep when you're dead, right? Like,
yeah, that'll be plenty of time.
I think, yeah, that'll, then, you know, you have plenty of time after you're dead to sleep. I would imagine.
We were actually expecting to launch, we created a board game. And we were expecting to launch that as well, April 8th. And then the COVID stuff happened and it sort of just changed the rules about what we were wanting to do. You know, it was difficult to get the launch and stuff together. So that's something that we had, but that's been postponed. So I don't know when that's going to happen.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, but it's done. Sitting on my desk. We play it, which is pretty awesome. But
well, just so you know, when this is out, I will post the link on the bottom of the info here so people can check out the Indiegogo, because I don't think until it's done you don't even have a link, so it'll, you know.
Yeah, it's like just in draft mode. Yeah,
it's in draft mode, which is good that you've already got a good amount of it already started, you know, because that will be kind of perfect. So by the way, Samantha just messaged me. We were supposed to have her on the show today, but unfortunately she got work. I'm definitely going to have her on another show at some point to promote this again. So,
well, that'd be great. Yeah.
You know, yeah. She will definitely promote the shit out of it because that's what she likes to, you know, like she loves that. And she'll probably rein me in. It won't be a lot of talking about Scooby-Doo porn and stuff on hers, you know.
But if you do, let me know.
Okay. And if she wants that, she'll, you know, she can contact you. If she wants to see Scooby-Doo porn at all, she can contact you and find out where to,
like,
where to go.
I'm not the official online custodian of the Scooby-Doo porn archives, by the way.
You don't have, like,
I could only hope.
You don't have you're not the president of the fan club.
No, I do that under a pseudonym.
Okay. So it is you.
Anonymity.
It is you. You know. But yeah, no, thank you so much for calling in today and chatting with me and all the craziness that has happened with your son and my friend. So like, it's just, you know, you never know what happens when you're in a Zoom meeting. That's the interesting thing is we're at home. We're not like, you know, we're not, well, technically our home is our office.
Yeah.
So, you know, lucky for us, but, you know, still, you just never know what's going to happen, which is so fun, honestly, to me. It's just,
I'm just glad the kid had pants on, because yeah. I don't think he's had pants on for 2 weeks.
That's interesting. There you go. I'm surprised you're not yelling at him about that, but all right, well.
I just looked down, I'm like, he's got pants on, so there we go.
All right, well, as he walked in here, because he didn't know what you were doing, I don't think.
Or he did, and he just did not give a single shit, which is also very, very possible.
Like father, like son, is that it? Like, would you have done that as a kid? Probably just walking.
Yeah, he's on Zoom meetings at school. I'm like walking behind him, and I've got like props. Rah, 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 rah. And they're like, Mr. Hamilton, nope. This is for educational purposes.
Yeah.
Get back to work.
Well, that's nice that they're doing Zoom school stuff. So that's really cool. You can, you know, that you don't have to be the teacher still, you know, or whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
you can let the teachers be the teachers, you know.
Yeah,
that's got to be very awkward though, like all the kids, that's got to be like 20 something kids or 30 something kids in one classroom, you know, and everything.
Yeah, and it's like trying to rein them in a classroom setting is difficult enough, but you know,
imagine them at home,
distractions around them. Yeah,
I know, they can probably be on their cell phone and be like, yeah, I'm learning.
Every time I walk by, it's like the world's most dysfunctional Brady Bunch. It's like you just got squares of chaos.
And your son's friends are going to be listening to this podcast going, oh, Scooby-Doo porn now.
Oh, yeah. 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 I'm launching the revolution here today. It's happening.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this. This is awesome. How can people reach you?
We're actually pretty visible. I do most of the stuff under my website banner, which is horrorfix or horror-fix.com. So we're on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, even though I'm horrible at it and I really don't know how to use it. We're on Facebook. We're just about everywhere. So if you look for Horror Fix, you're going to find us. We're pretty visible.
Okay.
And I'm Ash Hamilton on Facebook too.
You do Twitter and stuff? I guess you do it for Horror Fix, right?
Horror Fix, I do stuff under the Twitter banner. We've got a fairly decent following. I think we're almost like 50,000 on Twitter. So
oh, wow. That's good.
A few people on there. So
it's
my inappropriateness goes to a large following of people.
How long have you had the Horror Fix site?
Oh, geez. It was right about the time my son was born. So about 7 years.
Jeez. That's great, though. Good for you, dude. That's awesome. I'm in awe of anybody who can launch a horror, website. The one thing I get always mad about, which if you do this, it's no saying about whatever, but the one thing that annoys me these days is non-horror related stuff going on horror, like websites and stuff.
People are hungry for content right now, and it shows. We try not to. I think the only thing that I'll do that's off topic is if I see something that's general about filmmaking, like a book on filmmaking that I think like horror people would be interested in. That's something that I sometimes will veer off, because I know that a lot of people who follow the site are also, indie filmmakers. So
right.
If I can give them something, besides the usual piece of news, but that's maybe like one out of 100, 200 articles. It's not very often that we sort of, dumpster dive to get other stuff. Like for the most part, we're pretty much straight horror.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, dude. And I am looking forward to everything you guys put out, I think this is going to be exciting. I'll post the internet, the Indiegogo link, so people can check it out. And I look forward to everything that you've got going on. And check out horror-fix.com. Check out what's going on there. And let's have Sam come on soon and chat about it as well.
Well, I had a great time. Thank you so much for listening to my rambling as well as talking about the film. And I'm going to hold both you and Sam to the largest cheese manufacturing factory.
Yeah.
Someday,
we gotta
that
do it.
Is where we will meet.
That is where we'll meet. I'm sure she'd love that. I don't know how much she's into cheese, but I think she would definitely be into just meeting somewhere and doing a podcast,
It's our mythical Copacabana. We're all going to meet at the largest cheese manufacturer in the States. It'd be awesome.
Well, thank you so much. And everybody check those things out. And we'll catch you later. Bye, everybody.